When did you get home?
Thursday morning.
All right.
So I'm not jet lagged anymore. I slept all day Thursday, so.
Not jet lagged, but like, that's a lot of driving around in a vehicle with instruments.
Where did you come from?
Where'd you go?
I did as little Cotton Eye Joe-ing as I possibly could. We did, it was an East Coast run, so we left Nashville 2 weeks ago, two Thursdays ago. It was like exactly 14 days, almost to the minute. We left from Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and then we went through Kentucky, Pittsburgh. We went kind of around New York. We played like three or four shows in New York. I actually drove by Clifton Park for the first time since I moved from there like over 20 years ago.
How was that experience for you?
It was like 1:30 in the morning, and we had just played and, you know, just loaded all our gear out again. And this was halfway into the run. So I was a little out of it, but I was like, I wasn't driving at that point. So I was kind of drifting off, and I was like, wait a second. I feel like I have this memory in the back of my head of like, I know we played Saratoga Springs, so I know we're near where I grew up. And then I look up and I see the exit for Clifton Park, and I remember my address, my street address from when I was little. So I put it in, and we were only like 2 or 3 miles from it.
Oh my gosh.
You're so like, then I had my eyes
a presence
out, like,
I haven't felt in many years.
Yeah. It was definitely fuzzy memories. You know, I was trying, and it was late at night. I was trying to just keep my eyes out for road markers that I could remember. We went over the bridge on, I think it's Interstate 87. It's like exits 8, 7, and 6 going towards like Latham and Troy. And I was like, Wow, I actually remember this. This is crazy.
That's awesome.
But then the tour kept going. We went up as far as, I think, Boston. And then we kind of worked back up the coast. We played in Chesapeake. We played a couple shows in North Carolina. And now I'm back home.
Nice. How long was that all together?
It was 2 weeks, pretty much exactly. Like this past, it was two Thursdays ago up until we got back really early in the morning this past Thursday.
Yeah. Nice.
Mm-hmm. It was well paced out. We had a couple rest days in there, but I still slept all day Thursday when I got back.
Just a full recoup day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It really did. Like my whole body was just kind of like lead. I just kind of sank into the bed for a day, and now I'm back to business as usual in Nashville.
Nice.
What's business as usual? Just make more music.
We should open up, and this will all be part of the episode.
Oh yeah, that's true.
Like this is all part of the episode.
This is why I keep him around, because I just talk. Welcome, everybody. Please stop. Damn it. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the My Life, Your Life Together podcast. Zach. We're joined by Jesse Peck, musician extraordinaire. We grew up-ish together, but like we were both young when we moved.
I was 8 years old, I think, when we left New York.
Yeah. And then you ended up in one of the Carolinas.
Yeah. We moved to South Carolina. And that's, I feel like I kind of grew up split between New York and South Carolina. Cause when you're 8, you know, I spent like 8 years old, like the first 8 years of my life right in, you know, in New York in the North. And then up until college, I was in South Carolina. Very stark contrast from New York.
Yeah.
Nice.
Zach asked me, he's like, does this mean I get like a bunch of childhood secrets from you? And I was like, I don't think we were old enough to have secrets yet. I said, the only thing I remember is you guys being in the apartment behind RPI. And I think I recall locking you in a bedroom once and both of our mothers freaking out that they couldn't get into the room.
So I asked him, I was like, so really, it's just going to be stories of how you bullied him growing up.
I don't recall bullying him. Like, he was like, we were actual friends.
Yeah. Yeah, I have nothing but positive memories. But that said, they are very fuzzy memories because I was a small child.
Same. Like, me and Lex went down to Nashville to see her cousin in 2017 or 2018. And we got to meet up and have lunch. And my mom had found like an old picture of us.
Yeah.
And like neither of us remembered it, obviously. One of us is in a high chair. I'm assuming it was probably, I'm older than you, right?
Yeah, I'm a year or two younger than you. So it was probably okay. Me in the high chair.
Nerd in a high chair. Yeah. So like, same, I have fuzzy memories. A lot of memories from church. But I mean, that's just where I spent most of my time. So most of my memories are from that place.
Yeah, your parents were really involved in the church. Honestly, I think your parents really made a pretty strong impression on me because I still remember your parents really well. Like, a lot of my memories of you are the association of like, oh, that's like Mr. and Mrs. Beck's kid, because they would interact with me a lot at the church, probably just because I was very misbehaved. I would run around the church and stuff, and your mom would always be like, stop, like, don't run inside.
All of that tracks.
So you were the like wild troublemaker kid running around. And
I wouldn't say you were misbehaved though, because from what I remember, like, you were well behaved. You just had energy.
And I did have a lot of energy.
In a building that size with as many straight hallways as that church had, like, what is a kid with energy supposed to do if not just book it? Because the shape of it was like almost like a hexagon shape, the original building. And so the hallways were just these straight hallways. And right. So like, you felt like you were like drifting around the corners if you were running.
Because it wasn't like super sharp corners.
Yeah, it wasn't super sharp.
So you could take like your one straightaway corner into your next straightaway.
What I'll never understand is, you know, you build a building that size and like they didn't put up those fancy corner mirrors where you could see the reflection of anything. So it was just like, oh.
You'd book it around a corner and crash right into someone.
Yeah. It's a church of, I don't know, hundreds of people. You're going to run into somebody.
Mm-hmm. And especially when you're a reckless child running through the halls.
Yes. Not worrying about crashing into someone. You're just, just trying to live life. Look what I can do.
Just live life. So then you moved away, and like my mom and your mom kept in touch, I know. And then next thing I knew, you were like a musician in Nashville. And I eventually, clearly, we reconnected on Facebook, and you started posting videos and sharing things of you playing and doing stuff. And I'm like, and I think it was definitely before even I started actually playing music too. And I was like, man, why does that guitar have 7 strings on it? That doesn't make any sense to me. But yeah, I mean, we could literally chat about whatever you want, but like, I've enjoyed stalking your musical journey. And I'm like I'm one of those quiet weirdos on Facebook. Like, I rarely post unless it's about the podcast now.
Mm-hmm. But you just look and follow.
I follow
everything that's going on.
And if I have friends that are doing cool things, like, I'll look it up. And then like me telling you, you know, your first 2 singles were awesome. Like, I'm horrible at doing that. Usually I just listen and then I'll tell people about it here, but I won't post about it on Facebook or let the person know I actually enjoyed what they're producing. It's a me problem. I need to work on it.
You're just a fly on the wall. I mean, that's what social media is kind of for, right? You just kind of put it out there and you don't have to necessarily, there's a separation in the interaction where, you know, you can see what everybody's up to, but you don't have to. It's kind of like everybody's more connected and less connected in a way.
Yeah, it's true.
Cause yeah, I'll do the same thing. I'll go on Facebook and I'll see what people are up to that, you know, maybe I used to regularly interact with them in my day-to-day life, but now, you know, we're either in different cities or we just don't walk, like, we're not in the same circles anymore, but you still kind of get a window into their life. And it's an interesting, like, separate layer of connection. And yeah, I'm definitely curious what my musical journey would look like to you through the lens of just what I post, because I definitely don't post, like, you know, everything. And I definitely post kind of out of necessity as a musician. Social media, and I'm sure you've encountered this with your podcast, is kind of like a, whether you want to do it or not, you kind of have to do it when you're trying to get it out there. You'd rather just do the thing, but then you have to like, oh, I have to make this thing to get people to check it out.
Yeah.
So we've actually had a lot of musicians on the podcast, partially because it's, you know, some that we're both musicians, we love music and we love talking about it. So what do you play?
Yeah, I guess I can give a little background. So yeah, because all we know is me running around the halls as a child here. So, I moved to South Carolina when I was like 8, and aside from maybe some piano lessons in middle school, I wasn't really that involved in music until high school. I started playing bass guitar because that was the gap that was needed in the youth group at the church I was going to.
Spoken like a true bassist.
Yeah, so it's like, oh, someone needs to play bass.
It's a bass.
Yeah, and I enjoyed that. I taught that to myself just enough to be able to play the songs for worship on Wednesday and Sunday nights for like the high school youth group in my college. I don't really play bass that much anymore. That was just kind of what got me started getting up on a stage, playing with a band.
Yeah,
I really enjoyed that experience, the experience of playing with a group of musicians, because, you know, learning piano in middle school, it didn't really stick because I didn't really like that it wasn't a full song, you know, like I would tinker around, and I kept kind of trying to teach myself things on the piano after I got lessons, but it didn't really stick. And then I moved from playing in my youth group to playing in the main stage on Sundays. Still bass at first, and then went through a whole bunch of church dramatic changes. I'm sure you've gone through things like that. Things change, people leave, people go. There's always drama and stuff. That might be a whole other story, you know, but
probably.
Yeah. But when that happened, they didn't really have anybody to do everything that needed to be done musically. And they were basically like, you're going to play guitar now. And all I knew,
you're like, I guess I'm learning guitar.
Basically. Cause I was like, I know root notes. I don't really know music theory. I don't really know chords. I don't know the top two strings. I only know like the low four strings.
Yeah.
And just kind of put on the spot to start figuring out what I was going to do on this different instrument that made different sounds. And it filled a different spot in this musical conversation that happens in a band setting. Mm-hmm. And I really just kind of tinkered and experimented with that throughout high school. And at some point along the way, I decided I wanted to go for it. I wanted to study it in depth, which in hindsight was maybe a, I don't know if rash decision is the right word. It was definitely like a, maybe like a pipe dream of like, I want to do this full time. And I didn't really have the experience to go into like music school in a college and study it. Like, it's not like I was reading music or had much experience beyond the worship team playing just those kinds of songs. I didn't really know any jazz or any classical music or anything like that. But my junior year, the summer before I would have had to audition, I got some guitar lessons, learned some classical, learned to sight read. I auditioned for Belmont in Nashville, made it in by the skin of my teeth, was probably like the bottom rung guitar player in the guitar program the whole time I was in there, and just kind of survived music school just barely. But I learned a lot of good skills as far as music theory and a little bit broader of a perspective beyond just a single instrument, kind of some arranging ideas. And it really sparked my creativity with writing music, which is probably my favorite aspect of music is composing it. So that's how I got to where I am now in Nashville, basically, just from kind of like, I'll try this. Like, I probably shouldn't, but I'm going to try it. I made it through. And now these days, I mostly play actually piano. I don't even play guitar that much after spending 4 years studying like classical program. And jazz. Yeah,
I was going to ask.
Play most of the keys now. And that shift kind of happened. The main band that I started playing with while I was in school, you mentioned the 7-string guitar. I played with this band called Edge of Reality. And it's kind of like a fusion progressive metal band. You know, it gave me a chance to apply the things I was learning in school, because that's a genre that has a lot of different styles. The jazz background comes in handy, but also the classical. So we got to do some finger picking stuff. We got to do some extended range, low, you know, 7-string stuff.
You get to write songs called like Moldy Banana Bread.
Exactly. It's kind of silly. Yeah. You get to just kind of do whatever. And that was what I enjoyed at the time musically, was like, all right, I'm going to write these silly compositions and then figure out how I'm going to put that onto an instrument. And
yeah,
that's really cool.
And it was a lot of fun. And we kept doing that, playing shows, touring a little bit here and there as we could after I graduated. But eventually everybody kind of started to go their separate ways and have different tastes develop, which, you know, we started it in college. So it makes sense that once you get out of that stage of life, you start to get led in different directions. And I had wrapped up too much of my musical identity in that project. And when it kind of fell apart, it helped me to reevaluate things. And that's what led me to piano more so than guitar, because I realized that it better suits the compositional framework that I work with, the focus on writing music. Guitar has its limitations, which obviously, you know, the piano does too, and the guitar can do things the piano can't. But timbre wise and range wise, the piano is just more versatile. And I did technically start it younger, even though, you know, I didn't get into it at first when I was younger.
Yeah.
It still was more linked to my mental, the way I was thinking about parts and writing things. It just connected to my hands a little better. So,
and I feel like playing guitar, and my wife plays piano, I feel like the piano is easy, like the layout is easier to understand and look at it and be able to compose, because sometimes on guitar, looking at, you know, your frets and your different, you know, strings, like it's harder to, at least for me, visualize where things are at in the song, or, you know, in a scale or things like that.
Absolutely, because the guitar, the piano is linear. The guitar is kind of like six pianos next to each other, starting at different points. So it's different shapes, different patterns. It's different visualization and memory and like muscle memory that has to happen. But they both have their strengths, but it's definitely easier to start on the piano for sure.
It's actually kind of funny, because like my wife and I, we both play on the worship team. And so there's been a time where I'm like, I actually don't know the chord shape for that. And my wife's like, oh, well, it's just like this note, and this note is the chord. And I'm like, it doesn't work. That's not quite how it works on the guitar, babe. Like,
It can, but that takes a lot more work to get to that point.
Yeah.
I'd say that was the one thing, well, not the one thing. One of the big things I got out of studying guitar in school, in music school, like more in depth, was the ability to understand how the fretboard is laid out. Because you can reach that level of, you don't have to always rely on shapes and patterns. You can actually just know the fretboard the way you can know the piano. It's just a little bit more convoluted, because it's not just left to right. It's left to right and up and down.
Up and down.
Yeah.
Or you can play the bass. And a trained monkey named Zach Beck could do that. So
he always downplays his musical ability.
Well, because like, so as a musician, I would identify close to like what you were saying about your journey and where you started. Like, I mean, I learned to play bass because I found out that the beginning of For Whom the Bell Tolls was a bass and it wasn't an electric guitar. And I was like, all right, that's cool. And so I would just memorize and learn these Metallica songs, but have no idea what I was actually doing with my life. And then we needed a bassist at church, and my friend was the worship director. And like, it was like 6 weeks before Easter. He's like, do you want to play bass for Easter? So like my first time playing in front of people was going to be this Easter service. And so I was like, I just lied through my teeth. I was like, yeah, I know how to play bass. And like I memorized the songs he gave me. And then like 2 weeks before, he was like, oh yeah, I gave you one of the songs wrong. It's actually this. And I was like, oh my God, it just took me 4 weeks to learn these ones. And it was all fine, but like, there's no way I sounded good, but thankfully it was church and like the most forgiving church I've ever been to. And I know a lot more now, but like music theory is lost on me. Figuring out what goes where for what reason is lost on me. I enjoy writing lyrics for songs. I wouldn't even know where to start composing a song, but I don't feel like I need to. Like, I don't have that drive in me to produce a song by my own, if that makes any sense. Like, to come up with chord structures or what sounds good where. Like, it's not for me. Mm-hmm. I enjoy playing it, though, and I enjoy playing it with other people. And that's why it's important to have people like you who enjoy the composition aspect of it to be like, this is what's in my brain, and then we're going to try it.
Mm-hmm. It is a curiosity thing for me. It is like I have this idea. I want to see if I can realize it. And it is something that, you know, music, the reason music is so, I guess, ingrained or so important to us all as humans, as like such a big part of the human experience, is that I think it's, you know, music, you can relate to it on so many levels. You can engage with it as something you just listen to. You can learn to play something to any level you want to dive into it. It will meet you there because it's such a fundamentally human thing that exists. You know, it's not like other animals really make music, or like, it's not something you really see in nature unless you pick the patterns out yourself and like interpret it that way, and like, oh, that thing in nature is musical. Like, you know, you could hear like a water dropping and you could say that's a rhythm, but I mean, you made that up. Like, we humans kind of just create and think that way. So, you know, whether you're writing it or playing it or just listening to it, you're engaging in a very human fundamental level thing. So everybody kind of engages with it differently.
Yeah. And not to skip over other bands or even Flummox now, but like, is that what kind of spurred you to do your own solo project, is just this experimental curiosity?
It is, because I think that really the first way I engaged with music was in that curiosity mindset, because I remember even before I took piano lessons growing up, having little, you know, toy, like, you remember the little toy plastic xylophone thing with the little colored keys.
We still use it on the worship team.
That's
actually what he plays now.
I remember like that being a useful tool for me as a little kid, like curious to make sounds. If I had an idea in my head, I remember taking like Twinkle Twinkle Little Star and making it minor, which I didn't know what minor and major were as a little kid, but I remember like, ooh, if you change this note, it makes it sound like kind of darker or like sad. So that's always kind of the direction that like, that I've come at music, is curiosity. And it's great making it in a band context, because that's when your creativity and your perspective meshes with others. And you, I'm sure you experience that when you play on the worship team, even though you're in your lane and you're not thinking about the music theory, you're not thinking about writing anything, you're still contributing to a bigger musical context. And that's a beautiful thing. And the reason that I have taken, I guess, a step aside or beyond or different from that and done my own thing as well, is because there's some ideas I have that are just not going to be conducive to either playing live or to playing in a band setting. They're just ideas I have in my head. And I just want to see how those sound as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So are you currently doing just solo work, or are you also doing band?
So the main band that I play with right now is called Flummox, and I play keys in that band. And I definitely contribute to the writing in that band. That band has been around for a long time. I joined 4 or 5 years ago, and they already had a lot of songs written, but they didn't have keys. So I was able to come in and just be like, well, I'm going to add whatever I feel like fits the stuff that, that they already had written. And it's been cool to kind of inject myself into that group with their pre-existing songs, but now also get to add to new songs with keys in mind. Because it's very different to just add. It's almost like painting a house that's already been painted versus like designing the house from the ground up. It's like I added a layer of paint to an old house, but now we're building a new one together.
Yeah, that's cool.
So I get to put my compositional strengths, I guess, to work in that group, in addition to then like other ideas that I have. Well, that doesn't quite fit this group. Maybe I can do something on it, do something with it on my own.
Nice. So I'm curious what kind of genre would you say Flummox is the band?
Flummox is the band. We kind of like the whole edge of reality thing, and like Zach mentioned, moldy banana bread and just writing silly stuff. Flummox is definitely in a similar vein of kind of like progressive metal, like sometimes getting into like the heavier rock and metal things, sometimes getting into the sillier, jazzier things, and kind of changing up the genre. I think the term that our singer came up with for it is genre fluid, because it's not just about writing a bunch of different stuff. It's about changing it up in a way where it feels like it was supposed to go there, like I wouldn't have expected it to go from this really heavy thing into this like jazz thing all of a sudden, but like when it happens, it doesn't feel unnatural.
That's cool. And then your solo stuff, what kind of genre would you say that is? What kind of direction are you going with that?
The stuff I write on my own tends to be a little bit more chill, like electronic, ambient. I think I take a lot of influence from video game music for my own stuff. It's kind of got this, like, it could be a background thing, but if you listen to it, it's got some cool details and cool sound effects and stuff like that.
Nice.
If I ever travel in a spaceship in space, Harness the Abyss is what I'm going to be listening to.
I definitely go for a spacey vibe too. I'm glad that you said that.
Because like when I heard the first song, which I feel like an idiot because now the name is escaping me. Rain Falls Faster. Oh my God. Yeah, because that's so hard to remember. Three of the first words you probably learned as a kid, I can't remember. That's great. like I heard it and I was like, it's like, what is this doing to me? Because I love music like that. I just absolutely love things that are out of the mold of the Nickelback mold. Not that I'm hating on Nickelback, you know, I listen, I'm a lot in high school, it's fine. but like when I was listening to it, I'm like, man, I feel like I'm like high above the earth, just kind of like floating, and I can see everything below me. It was nice. Yeah. And then Seath came out yesterday. And that was like totally different. But it also made me feel almost the same thing, which was fun. Because like, I can't remember if I talked about it on a podcast before, but like, I love listening to like international bands. Like there's one from Sweden called Wintergatan, which I mean, they're fairly popular-ish, but like, they'll do live shows and play a typewriter in the middle of the song just to for like a different sound. And like their lead singer is the one who built the marble machine that plays all the different instruments just by cranking the handle. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so they just like, I just like things that make music that don't, what? I thought you were going to say something.
That, oh, I have a story after your...
That like, that don't fit into that traditional mold of like when somebody says, you know, what do you want to listen to? Or like, what music do you like? It's like, well, I like Taylor Swift. Like, nobody likes Taylor Swift. Okay, no, I can't say that. like, no, I like music that makes you, I don't know, think about what music is, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that makes sense. Beyond just like the instruments.
Yeah. Yeah. So, funny story. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So my drum teacher when I was younger, he at one point played in an experimental progressive jazz band. Like they just did all sorts of weird stuff. But I remember one day, like, because I had learning music, I had a hard time with creativity because I would be like, this is what I'm supposed to play. This is like, these are, you know, the rhythms. This is the times, you know, and trying to break out and build creativity. He had me like do all sorts of weird stuff. One of the examples, he was like, one time we were playing and just to experiment with sound, I took my cymbals and I set them up and I used my snare drum as a bowling ball and rolled it into my cymbals to crash them and see what sounds I could make. And I was like, I would never do that with any of my musical instruments, but that's wildly creative. Like, who would think, like, what sound does this make if I take my drum and roll it into my cymbals?
At the expense or risk of damaging the gear, but yeah, just because right. You need to hear what it sounds like.
Yeah.
It's like, I think it's Les Claypool who plays a Wamola. I can't remember if he made the instrument or not, but it's basically like, I think it's two bass strings that he attached to like basically a broomstick that goes into a box and then he hits it with a drumstick. He's brilliant.
That's, yeah, I would never even think to create something like that. Mm-hmm. But so you, before we started the episode, you were mentioning, right, you went on tour. That was with Flummox?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Nice. And you just got back from your tour. How often do you guys tour? Do you guys have like albums out?
Yeah, so we tour, I think this is probably like our like seventh or eighth tour since I joined about 4 or 5 years ago. So like roughly 2 a year or so.
Okay.
They're not always we just did a 2 week run. Sometimes it'll be as short as 4 or 5 days. Sometimes it'll be, more in the 10 to like 14, 15 day range. I know we're trying to do a longer one this fall and try to go a little bit more west because we've played a lot around the East Coast. We haven't really, we've never made it to the West Coast, but our goal is to make it out that way soon. But we have a couple albums out, a couple that either existed before I joined or were like almost done. Like I think when I joined, they were about to go into the studio for an EP. And so I auditioned with two old songs that they play live. And they were like, great. We're about to record this album. If you could learn it real quick, if you want to come, if you want to record, if you want to be on it, cool. I mean, and they were like, you know, if not, no pressure, but I was like, okay, like I'll see if I can come up with some keyboard parts for it. Cause again, they didn't have keys before I joined. So
yeah,
they weren't written with keyboards in mind. And I kind of added that layer in myself. So there's a couple releases that either have no keys or it was somebody in the band way back that just added some before I was in the band. Mm-hmm. But we've got 3 full length albums, or I guess 2 full lengths and an EP out right now. And we just finished recording one that has our current lineup actually all contributing to it, because a lot of the old stuff has past members involved in the writing process. So
yeah,
this is the first one we got to all get in a room together, the active touring lineup, and like, okay, what's our new thing going to be if we actually get down and like write it all together? So that'll hopefully be coming out in the next year or so.
That's exciting.
Yeah. We're looking forward to sharing it because it's very different from the music that that we're playing that was recorded with older lineups.
Nice. Yeah. So I'm really curious, right? You said that you've really gotten into and enjoy composition. How is that in a group setting, like with a band? How is that more challenging, more frustrating? Is it easier? How is that with other people?
That's a great question. I think that composition thrives on, like, I think the reason that so many, you know, you have some solo artists here and there, but, you know, even people like you mentioned Taylor Swift, you know, Taylor Swift writes some or maybe most of her stuff, but, you know, she also has other writers and producers that contribute to her songs. It's always going to be somewhat of a collaborative effort, I think, you know, 9 times out of 10. And there are benefits and there are also, you know, some struggles or challenges with it. And it really depends on the chemistry of who you're working with.
Yeah.
I prefer writing with people most of the time because I get kind of an option paralysis. When I'm writing by myself, I can do whatever I want.
Yeah.
And when you're writing with a group, you have some parameters to work with. Like, all right, this is the instrumentation because this is the band that we're writing for. And, you know, you have to think about the limitations of everybody in the band as players. You have to think about everybody's different tastes and, you know, musical tastes and influences. And those usually come together to give you, like, if I can write something probably more like naturally, if somebody comes with me like, hey, here's this riff I came up with, I could probably bounce ideas off that faster than if I think of an idea in my head and I'm just like, I can do whatever I want with that. And it's just me. It's going to be harder for me to like get that idea rolling into something bigger because I don't have that context of that group to help. Obviously, you run into dynamic, like personal dynamics sometimes where you might have creative differences or disagreements. I think that's why a lot of bands either change lineups or call it quits or change their name and get like a new member. Like people work together differently depending on, again, their background and their influences, and then also like the limitations of their playing ability as well. So yeah, I enjoy writing with Flummox. It feels a little, there's more momentum behind it than when I'm writing my own stuff for sure. So yeah, I guess that's
awesome.
Is that,
I kind of feel that a little bit. I mean, we've had a few songwriting sessions with a few members of our worship team recently, just because, you know, we wanted to start seeing what we could do essentially. And like I've heard from other people in the area or whatnot, like how difficult it is when you go into like a songwriting session. And so like, it's been super helpful that we've all known each other for, I don't know, 8+ years, minus the people that married into the worship team, if you will.
That's me.
Yeah. but like we all get along and stuff, and then like we'll start, and then I have this thing where I get these thoughts in my head, and then I'll just start rhyming things, which I don't want to do. And then the next thing I know, I have like a verse, chorus, and another verse that all rhyme with each other for zero reason. Yeah, it's exactly like Dr. Susan, our worship director's like, okay, I like the message of that, but what if we change the words so we're not, you know, making children's nursery rhymes? And I'm like, that's perfect. I think this is my role. I'll come up with ideas. I'll get the message to where it needs to be, but then you guys just like putz around with the words and the grammar, and you can make it work that way. And I'm fine with that role. Okay. It doesn't always happen that way, but a lot of the time.
Yeah.
He knows. Mm-hmm. He's there. He watches.
I was gonna say, I feel like so far I've had good luck with writing the riffs or the chord progressions for most of the different sessions, just playing around with progressions. And I'm not good with words, so I'm like, y'all say what you want, and I'll play around with progressions and find cool sounding stuff. But
so it's do you write so you meet up, do you have like your instruments on hand and you kind of jam out ideas, or is it more of like a brainstorming, like, all right, let's think about this
thing? So we'll have like I'll bring my guitar, and then so far we've always had a piano there at whatever house we're at, and so we'll kind of play around with guitar and piano while we also play around with lyrics and message and ideas for like what we want to, you know, the vision that we want for whatever the song is that we're trying to create.
And it's all, it's still new. So each of the sessions we've gone into with at least an idea, like the first couple sessions was, you know, Zach had just like this short tag that he threw onto a song. And after the service, I was like, is that an actual song or did you just come up with that? He's like, oh, no, I came up with it. And I was like, cool. So we went into the writing session with, you know, these seven words, essentially. And then you put the seven words out to, you know, the five of us that were there, six of us that were there. And then we all came up with something different. And I mean, if you have six ideas, there's going to be good ones and there's going to be bad ones. But my favorite thing to watch happen is watch the bad ideas trigger something in somebody else that comes up with the better idea.
Yeah.
Because that's, I mean, that's what collaboration is in everything. Mm-hmm. Like you can't be, I don't want to say you can't have self-esteem issues, but you got to have the self-confidence to be like, hey, you know, I'm thinking of this. What do you think? Be like, I'm not feeling it, but it made me think of this certain progression. It made me think of this certain lyric.
Or what if and we then, change it just a little bit this way?
Yeah. And then before you know, you something ugly births something beautiful. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's my favorite part. But yeah, we always have, so far we've always had an idea. It was kind of my idea to start the songwriting group. And so I try really hard to be prepared and be like, not just show up with nothing. Like, I'll open it to the floor, be like, if you guys have something that you want to bring, we'll work on it. If not, I mean, I've been thinking of this for years. So my notes in my phone are full of full songs. Tidbits. Yeah.
Oh, like, full songs.
Yeah. Like I have, like I've written full songs and stuff, but most of them are, you know, a few lines here and there. But I think I have like three full songs in my notes that I've putzed with over the course of the last couple of years. So we'll always have something to work off of. And then like even one of the first ones, I shared a song that I had written and I was like, I am under no disillusionment that this is a perfect song and like this is what's going to be out there. But even if you just take a verse or, you know, part of a chorus and build off of it, I'm perfectly fine with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely the spirit of collaboration. Yeah. And I think that's actually something that outside of maybe a context like what you described, where you have a group of people that have a really good chemistry, that have known each other for years and kind of have that mindset of coming at the collaboration from the idea that ideas are kind of just free flowing. I think that some musicians that get full songs in their head, when they get the opportunity in a band setting to present that idea, they might have a little bit of that illusionment, that kind of like, y'all are going to play this thing I wrote.
Yeah.
And depending on the band, sometimes that works. Sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes you get clashing when that happens, but sometimes the band is kind of happy to just like, oh, that's cool, I'll learn it. And they don't want to think about contributing ideas. They just want to play what they're given to play. So there's a lot of different ways that dynamic can go, but it's cool that y'all have a open collaborative mindset about things so that you can take full ideas and you can kind of run them through your group's filter in a way and like let everybody kind of just chisel at it or like add and take from it. That's something that not all bands have.
Yeah.
It's been fun.
I've heard that a lot. Yeah, it has been fun. And like next week we'll have another one and yeah. Super looking forward to it. As you were talking, I thought of a question, which might not even be an easy to answer question, but like, what, if you look back at all your ideas you've presented or even that you thought about making a song out of, like, what in the moment did you think was amazing? And now you look back and you're like, I'm real glad that never saw the light of day. Is there something that sticks out to you?
That is an interesting question. There's a couple different ways I could go about tackling that question, because there are some songs that, you know, even with my old band, with Edge of Reality, where like I hear them and I hear a younger, less developed version of myself, if that makes sense.
Okay.
Like, yeah. Even with the ideas being bounced off people, something still made it through that. When I look back, it's like, I could have like thought that through more. I could have developed it more. And it's, and I don't know if you've written enough songs with a group or put enough out there to have this perspective. When I hear stuff that I put out several years ago and I've got some time and distance between it, and then I hear it with kind of fresh ears, it's that exact feeling that what you said of like, oh, I wish that like this hadn't seen the light of day. You get this sense of like, why did I do it that way? You have a different analytical like lens for it. Mm-hmm. And I can hear writing habits in my old stuff with that band that I'm like, oh, I did that in every song. Like it was a lazy, like a habit. Like a writing technique that didn't really serve the song. It just was kind of the thing I knew to do. Mm-hmm. And so now I have that in my mind going forward when I'm writing new stuff. I'm like, well, I don't want to do this idea, whether it's like a fade out or like a specific chord progression or a specific like tempo change or time signature change. Like, oh, I've done that a bunch of times. I've relied on that as like a crutch, so I don't want to do that going forward. That's kind of, I guess, how you sharpen your writing tools or skills. You kind of force yourself to change how you do things.
For some reason, you talking about that like habit, whatever, just made me think of the like 90s worship song key change. How every worship song from like the 80s and 90s always had that big key change to like
spice they would do up the last chorus like up a half step or a whole step. Yeah.
Right.
It's super brilliant. No. Gosh, I had something that was at the tip of my tongue as you were talking.
And I ruined it.
No, you didn't ruin it. I'm just dumb. It was good too. I don't know if it was good. I can't remember. I remember.
Go for it.
Oh, it was good. Because I have a friend who started putting music out when he was like, gosh, he must have been 16 or so. And last year he had put out a full album. He's going to school for music and everything, released the album. And when I was getting ready to do a podcast with him, I was like, all right, I'm going to go back and listen to all of his old stuff too. And I have it downloaded on my phone, but I noticed it wasn't on Apple Music or Spotify anymore. And so when I was talking to him, he's like, oh yeah, I took it down. I looked back at it. It was like it's totally different. Mm-hmm. And he's like, I don't really regret anything about it, because if I never started somewhere, I wouldn't be where I am right now. And I'm like, that's a fantastic point. He's like, but when, you know, people search my music, even like down to the production level of what those two songs were, he's like, it's just not who I am. And if somebody clicks on that and listens to it, and then they don't actually listen to the stuff I'm doing now, I'd be really upset. I'd be like, all right. He's like, I still have the files. I have the originals. I'm probably going to re-record them now that I know what I'm doing a little bit better. But it's a great point that like so many people talk about doing it and then just, you just got to get started. And then, you know, yeah, you're going to have that hindsight realization. And it might not even be, you know, bad songs, or like, even when I listen back to like the first podcasts I ever did, I'm like, wow, I've actually come a long way. Or now that, pardon me, we've come a long way in even 9 months or so. It's like anything. Yeah. The more you do it, the better you get. And it doesn't mean you sucked back then. It just means you're better at it now.
Yeah.
That's a almost good perspective.
Like a developmental you develop your skill and almost like the term that popped into my head was like a musical maturity, right? Like you develop skill and maturity in whatever you're doing and understand it better and how to do it better and gain more skills. Like, you know, when you start as the garage band when you're 14 and you barely know how to play your instrument and you've got like three chords, as opposed to when you've graduated, you know, a music school and know theory and all that stuff. Like,
yeah,
big difference.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I don't know who to attribute this quote to, but I've heard it said that creativity is the enemy of, or sorry, perfectionism is the enemy of creativity.
That was me. I said that.
Oh, brilliant, brilliant philosophy.
Yes.
But that's it speaks exactly to what you're saying, is that, yeah, you have to start somewhere. And if you don't make something because it's not good enough, or you feel like it's like, oh, it's not, you're doubting whether it's like, you spend too much time trying to make it perfect and you don't just put it out there, you'll never put anything out there. You kind of have to just start somewhere and accept that it's not going to be perfect. And then you hear things, once you put some time and distance between it, you listen back and you can pick up, okay, well, these are things I can improve on the next time. And then you make another thing, and it's kind of like you're chiseling more detail into something. To like, if your career is a big marble block, if you're afraid to put a chink in it, it's just going to be a block. You have to chisel at it and take chances and put stuff out, and eventually you'll have something with depth and character to it.
Yeah. Less eloquently, but along the same lines of your quote, we were at Bethel Music Worship School last summer, and I took like some of the songwriting breakaways, and one of the things about co-writing, I think, I don't know if it was the name of the, it definitely was the name of the course, but one of the points somebody kept hammering home was, don't be afraid to suck. And I was like, that's easier for me to remember than the quote you said that I said. No. But yeah, that's just always in my head. Is like, don't be afraid to suck. Because like the more I thought about things, like I've said this plenty of times, is failure isn't trying something and having it go horribly wrong. Failure is just not doing it because you're afraid of what people are going to think. Mm-hmm. So I don't mind if I suck. That's why I surround myself with people who can take my failures and turn something out of it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then it still makes me look great. it's wonderful.
Go make me look good.
Yeah. So what's next for Harness the Abyss? There's a full album, right?
And that's your solo project.
Yes. So like Harness the Abyss is the name I came up with for my solo project, because I feel like it fit kind of that spacey vibe, like you said, like kind of floating. And full album is coming out next week. So I just did two singles, and next week I'm just going to put the whole thing out. And I'm already working on some other new songs. And I don't know exactly what is next, in the sense of like, I don't know if I'm going to do another album. I don't know if I'm going to do maybe just like some more singles, just like, okay, like here's this album. It's stuff that I've kind of workshopped over the years and finally felt bold enough to like, here's my own work out into the world. And if I should just kind of keep doing that in like smaller doses, and like, cause that album, a lot of the music on that album I've kind of been sitting on for a long time, or I've reworked it a bunch. And so I'm thinking, well, once that's out there, I need to just start putting out, well, here's where I am now. Here's, you know, songs that are in progress, you know. So I might just start dropping, you know, individual songs. I've been thinking about maybe trying to do some collaborations with other friends that, you know, I wouldn't normally get to make music with, you know, whether they're in other bands or acquaintances from music school, just reaching out and like, hey, let's just like do a song together, just so I can have some different perspectives and different musical minds to create something with. So that's some ideas of what I might do. I still have plenty of my least favorite part of the process the kind of self-promotion part of it. I still have to make content and stuff for the album so that, you know, people actually listen to it. Because like you have to kind of be
marketing aspect.
Yeah, you have to kind of be your own biggest fan and be a megaphone and put yourself out there, or nobody's gonna like latch on to it. So
yeah,
I'll be your megaphone. I got you.
Thanks.
That's awesome.
So yeah, so step one, megaphone. Step two, new song. Step three, collaborations. That's kind of my solo music journey.
And step four, stardom.
Maybe. Probably not. But that's fine.
No. Listen, I've worked on this thought process a lot in therapy lately. If there's a chance that it all goes horribly wrong, there's a chance it goes horribly right. So there we go.
Yeah. Well, stardom may not necessarily be horribly right. But, you know, I think stardom... I mean, you think about how many musicians there are in the world and how many of them become household names, and the perception, at least outwardly, of what their lives are like. I feel like it's fairly apparent that there's a lot that comes with that level of like publicness to your life.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's plenty of people who are doing the music thing and they have success, and success doesn't have to be fame.
That's what I was just gonna say.
Stadiums.
Like, I look at, I think they're from Saratoga, Clifton Park, but Coheed and Cambria.
Who? Oh, are they from that area?
Yeah,
I didn't know that.
From up here?
Yeah. So they're my friend. Or she works out with their drummer. And that's so cool. Like she sent me like pictures of them before, and I'm like, how come he's never at the spin classes when I go there? I'm like, she's like, he doesn't do spin classes, you weirdo. He lifts tires over his head because he's jacked. And I was like, oh, okay. But yeah, like, I mean, there's, you know, people in Germany probably aren't gonna know who they are, or at least not to my knowledge. They weren't Guitar Hero, so that's something.
I was gonna say, Coheed and Cambria is actually fairly.
Yeah.
They probably got somewhat of a global audience.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. But like you said though, there's people that have a great deal of success that aren't common household names, but it's what works for them and it's what they want out of it to do, you know, do something you love and make a living off of it without having to, you know, hop on a tour bus or
worry about paparazzi.
Yeah.
Tabloids.
Oh man. I think if I ever win the lottery, I'm just going to find like local musicians and start following them around with cameras. I'm going to be the worst human in the world.
If you win the lottery?
Yeah, because then I wouldn't have to work and then I can just follow them around. Like pop out of the bushes, stick the camera through their apartment window and be like...
Don't paparazzi do that for a living though? Like don't they...
Yeah, I know.
Somehow pay their bills doing it? I don't know if they sell those pictures to like... tabloids or
the ones you see at the cash registers.
Listen, this was a thought that popped into my head and it immediately just came out of my mouth. I don't want to be crucified for sharing my thoughts, and now I'm just going to take that whole part out and you guys are going to look like idiots making fun of me.
Yeah, we gotta be careful.
The power of editing.
Yes, we have to treat the editor well.
Yeah, don't piss off people that handle your food, and don't piss off the editor.
And we're just going to cut into that. It's going to skip the whole thought, and we're just going to cut into don't piss off the editor.
I think that's going to be a great social media like promo for this. It's just going to be like that 5 seconds.
Don't piss off the editor.
Yep.
What a great idea.
That reminds me of, if y'all are familiar with Bo Burnham.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yep.
One of his specials, he says something about, he's like, I've got to tell you my bit about editors. And then it like just cuts to like completely something else.
Oh, yeah. He's so fun. I love like musicians, or I'm going to say comedians who are musicians or vice versa. Like Bo Burnham. I love Stephen Lynch.
Tim Hawkins.
Yeah. It's fascinating to me because you don't have to be good at one thing You have to be good at two things, and you have to make them both work together. And if what either one or the other is off, you're
it doesn't work.
It doesn't work. Mm-hmm. That's stressful.
Yeah, I couldn't imagine doing that. Like, yeah, the musician side of things already takes up enough of my mental capacity. I couldn't imagine having to focus on in like a live setting, like, all right, I'm gonna play all this stuff, and then also like I have to be funny as well.
Yeah.
That's a lot of pressure.
What if you just did the music and then I did the funniness?
That's a little more doable.
That's a collaboration I can get behind. Mm-hmm. You let me know when we're going to make this happen.
My agent will call your agent.
He's my agent. That's not true. My agent's my wife.
I was going to say, what about the executive producer?
I schedule things. And forget to tell her about it. And then she's like, what are we doing Saturday? I'm like, oh, I have two podcasts to record. We can go look for a baby glider after. Sorry. It's fine. She's fine. It's all fine. Thanks for talking with us.
Absolutely. Yeah. This has been great.
It has been fun.
So if people want to follow you, if they want to follow Flummox, if they want to follow Harness the Abyss, where can people find links and all that stuff to
probably the best, honestly, just like my personal Instagram. It's just my first name underscore last name, just Jesse Peck, because I've got Flummox's Instagram linked there, and I've got bio links to my own music there. It's probably the Sweet. Easiest.
Oh, nice. And then do you guys have like merch? Obviously you have albums out that can they find those like iTunes, all that, Spotify?
Yeah. Flummox and recently Harness the Abyss are both on Spotify. They're on all the streaming services, YouTube, Bandcamp. Flummox has like a label, which I think that website has like our merch on it and stuff. We sell most of our merch just at our shows. But I mean, if you wanted physical media, I think that can be got through the label or through Flummox's Bandcamp, but all those links should be just on Flummox's social media pages.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's easy for me to add to the description. I just have to put your Instagram and then people can start clicking links.
Yeah. We'll put it like somewhere down here or
down
something.
Here? Not up here?
Not up here in the corner, wherever.
I'm going to put it across Jesse's forehead.
Just the whole time, just across my
just
eyes.
Just a big banner.
Don't tempt me. Oh my god, that'll be the funniest. No, I would never. Yes, I would. Who am I kidding? But no, after this last week, so our friend's band, we did a podcast with them a couple weeks ago, and I edited it and I released it on Wednesday, and my friend John texted me. He's like, did you know that Feel is playing in the middle of the episode, so you can't hear any of the audio other than the song for like 3.5 minutes. I was like, because I just forgot to delete a track. And by then I had already moved the files to my completed folder. Oh, and no. DaVinci, for whatever reason, won't let me just follow the steps and move the files back. Mm-hmm. And so I had to do a disk search. And so I did the disk search, which went through like 80,000 folders, finally found it. I deleted the track, didn't listen to it because I'm like, that was the only problem. DaVinci found one of his audio files from an episode we did in November and put it in the episode rather than the audio from
the actual episode
with the band. And so you get like a minute into it and you hear him talking about nothing that has to do with it. And he's talking it, and I'm like, so I'm driving on I-90 with the app on my phone that I used to distribute. And I'm like, just driving. I'm like, unpublish. So I had to force close the app. I'm still driving. I'm like, unpublish. And finally unpublished. And like, I just have to re-edit everything. And I don't know why I told that story, but that's not going to happen with this. This is going to be fine. Otherwise, I'm going to cry and retire.
The better you get at editing, the more you will relish in and potentially abuse those powers.
Oh, yes. Man. So the editor pissed himself off and...
The editor was in a bad mood Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. I'll tell you that much. Oh. It just... whatever. But hey, you live and you learn. And thank you for taking your time and doing this with us. I mean, it was fun to chat with you and go over things. And I'm going to keep listening to your stuff and keep sharing it with all my friends up here. And
everybody watching and listening, go check out Flummox and Harness the Abyss. Go to Jesse's Instagram and find all the links there. Buy some merch, buy their albums, support them.
Yes. Don't be dumb. Support people that do good things.
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, no problem, man.
And all our viewers and listeners.
Oh, if you support us too. We're
if important. You like us, you like what we do, share the podcast with your friends. Go buy our merch. I'm actually surprised at how many hats I've seen. People are actually buying our hats. Quite a few. Nice. You know, these sweatshirts are super comfy.
They are. They're awesome. Fat guy approved, which means you can't sweat through them. Tested by yours truly. So
we got
I like the logo.
Yeah. And we got new shirts in all sorts of different colors and stuff. Long sleeves, short sleeves, hoodies, sweatshirts, hats. Go buy some cool stuff.
Yeah.
So thank you everyone for tuning in, for listening to us, to watching us, come to check out Jesse and what he's doing with music. And yeah, we'll see you guys next time.
And theme.
Cut.